Don't miss SportsCenter today, 6 Eastern on ESPN. After PTI, with what the Ravens are saying about Lamar Jackson's quad, what the last night meant for the Eagles and for Eli Manning, and evaluating the escalating cost of Garrett Cole. All that and more at Sage and Kevin with SportsCenter, 6 Eastern on ESPN and the ESPN app. All right, how about this moment? New coach at Ole Miss, Lane Kiffin, got a warm reception on the tarmac when he landed in Mississippi Sunday night. He's holding babies.
Wow.
He's being given a royal welcome. And then he was asked about that arrival yesterday.
Talk about the reception you received from the fan base. Did you ever think you'd be kissing and hugging babies at the tarmac when you got off the plane?
A lot better than another tarmac experience that I had.
Everyone's hysterical too. Laughing. Should we explain?
Oh, yeah. The last time he was on a tarmac, Paul, I think he was getting fired.
Yeah, Pat Hayden fired him on the tarmac after he lost Arizona when he was at Southern Cal in 2013.
That feels like a long time ago.
Yeah. Right, he's down there at Ole Miss. Going to be the best 2 years they've ever had. Anyway, we welcome you back to another hour of Get Up. We come to you live, as always, from above the Heineken River Deck at Pier 17. I'm going at Feinbaum in this hour. But first, we're going to get up with Carson Wentz. The much-maligned Philly quarterback was there when they needed him most. What does last night mean for the final 3 weeks of the season? Plus, the Patriots acknowledge videotaping an opposing sideline. They say it was an innocent mistake. Do you believe them? We'll tell you everything there is to know. And then there's nothing better than petty NBA Twitter. And last night, we saw one of the best examples of the year. You'll see it as we get this hour rolling. It's time to get up on ESPN. And we go back to last night, Dan Orlovsky in a game that your guy Carson Wentz desperately needed at home against this guy, Eli Manning, making his return.
It was a great night for Eli. His family's there. He started off really fast. His slant route, watch the ball placement on the back shoulder. Okay, that allows Slayton to spin out of that tackle. It's thrown there on purpose, and the Giants score early.
Giants up 7-0, and the Manning family is excited, and the Eagles will be dealing with the last thing they need, more injuries, Alshon Jeffrey and Lane Johnson.
They went into this game with 3 receivers. Alshon Jeffrey goes down, and then Lane Johnson is the big one. This is a totally different football team when Lane Johnson is on the field. And at this point, I'm thinking, there's no way that the Eagles could win this game with all these injuries.
So we will see Eli Manning right before the half finding Slayton again. What a half for Eli Manning.
It's terrible coverage. I mean, they're double teaming him, both the corner and the safety. Slayton splits him, and it's a really good job by Eli seeing the safety go to one side of the field, coming back to the other side of the field for Slayton. The Giants jump up early, and I'm going, we're never going to hear about Daniel Jones again.
17-3 Giants at the half, fourth quarter. It's a 7-point game. Eagles on a fourth down in their own territory, and they keep it with the big fella.
Something that the Eagles are notorious for. Being aggressive, no matter where the ball is, they go quarterback sneak. And then I love this throw by Wentz to Arcega Whiteside. This is called that fade route where you drift in towards the sideline, throw it over that outside shoulder, and it's really a big-time catch by the rookie.
Yeah, for a team that has dropped a lot of balls this year, that's a great grab. And then Wentz looking for the big guys. It's Dallas Goedert inside the 15, and then they'll find Ertz for the game-tying touchdown.
This is a really nice design. Ball in the left hash. Make the safety drift to the field, and then as the defender's coming down on Carson Wentz, a little dropped arm angle, beautiful throw to the only guy open, Zach Ertz.
We're in overtime. Eagles get it first. Touchdown wins it. Field goal doesn't. First and 10 at their own 36. This is Boston Scott.
Darren Sproles' identical twin, just about 5'8", 5'7", but an outstanding performance last night, getting the ball on the edges a bunch.
He had 16 touches for 128 yards, and then they're moving the football. This is Josh Perkins for a first down. Again, they need a touchdown to win it, and they get it back to Ertz.
I can't believe that the Giants weren't double covering Zach Ertz here. They brought him down in motion. The Eagles did. This is a play that Carson Wentz has loved since college, and he goes uncovered. Good job seeing him. Not this is bad defense more than good offense, but at the end of the day, a huge win for Carson Wentz in this Eagles team.
Double covering. Didn't even look at him. Eli falls. Wentz a winner.
We got no choice but to keep it going. You know, we're going to use this one. This obviously it was a sloppy one, but we got to win. You know, and now hopefully this springboards us for these last three, and we just take it one game at a time and see what happens.
You know, it's a lot of boos, a lot of everything. A lot of yard riding headlines before we even won the game. You know what I'm saying? Because wasn't that three straight we lost already?
Yep.
Yeah, so 4 straight wouldn't have looked good in Philly. I was scared to walk outside, boy, if we'd have lost this one.
All funny when you win. It wasn't easy for Philly's offense last night. They went to third down on 21 occasions and converted 9 of them. The 21 third downs, the most by any team in a win over the last 5 years. tied for the most by the Eagles in a win since the merger. So, look, we are contractually obligated to allow Dan Orlovsky to gush about Carson Wentz for 60 seconds, and then we can move on to other things. Okay, you love him.
Yeah.
You believe in him.
Absolutely.
There have been a lot of questions this year, and last night, while everyone around him is dropping like flies, he did play big.
I believe in him more now this morning than I did yesterday morning, because there were going to be many reasons where you could have said he lost the game because of this way. There would have been excuses and reasons to say the weather or the injuries. And there's an expectation level that when you become the guy at a franchise, that you can overcome some of those things. Now, yes, they're playing against the 2-10 Giants, but you got to be the guy that you can overcome that stuff. And the injuries start piling up, and they're playing bad at home. They're down 17-3 midway through the third quarter. They're dead. They're lifeless. The only person who has energy is Deuce Staley on the sidelines. And then all of a sudden, the quarterback makes a play on 3rd and 6, and you get a conversion. And it's like, okay, there's something. And it's like, I feel like I'm watching The Undertaker come back to life on Monday Night Raw or something like that. The distribution of the football. You had to play a different way last night. It couldn't be the heroic play, run around, and hurt your football team. It had to be about getting the ball out. It had to be about getting completions. It had to be about making sure that you didn't turn the football over or take sacks to hurt them. And that was the first time, at least to my memory, where I watched Carson Wentz play a certain way that meant that that was the only way you could win that football game.
Des, we saw Brandon Graham talking there, and we were kind of laughing about him saying he'd be afraid to walk outside if they hadn't won the game.
Oh, yeah.
Can one win like this really change a season around for a team?
Without a shadow of a doubt. I mean, you look at everything they were up against last night, the weather, like you talked about Wentz. He could have folded his team because they had dropped a series of passes, especially in the first half.
Yep.
It's like, I'm putting the ball where it needs to be, coach. What more do you want from me? But they didn't turn on themselves. They believed in themselves. I think that win can help them more than a Meek Mill anthem. I'm telling you, when you have your own crowd against you at home, the conditions are terrible. It seems like you have no hope. But then Boston Scott, he was that spark that they needed, and they started to build from there. They started to believe in each other, circled the wagons. Tremendous win for the Philadelphia Eagles. I like what I saw last night.
I think that's a valid point, though. It's not just – I mean, that's a tremendous win for the coaching staff, for what they had to deal with, moving receivers around, Des, and like, okay, this guy's got to go here.
Right.
It's a big for the offense. The defense shut down
the
Giants, you know, offense. The injuries, some of the young kids that had to step up. Listen, like – I don't know how many guys at the quarterback position in the NFL win that football game.
Right.
Yeah. I'm being honest. Yeah. Like, you have to totally change the way you play and go, all right, I'm playing this game with these people against this team. Mm-hmm. How do I do that? That's when you see growth as a quarterback. Like, Tom Brady's notorious for this. Drew Brees is that, like, these guys change the way that they play depending on how the game is going and who they have and who they're playing against. This is a big moment for Carson Wentz. This is a really big game to win one that you, in many ways, you shouldn't.
So they finish with 3 division games, right? They have Washington, then the big one with Dallas, and then the Giants. And we'll see the 2 teams now, they and Dallas, are tied atop the division. Our weekend began Thursday night watching the Cowboys. You know every player on that team. Last night it ends with the Eagles. I've never heard of anyone that they're playing with at this point. They're playing with guys you've literally never heard of.
Right.
Which team do you buy? Which team do you believe is ultimately going to win the division?
The Birds. I sang the Fly Eagles Fly song on the show last year. I'm not going to do it yet.
Don't do
I'll
it.
Wait till December 23rd.
Oh,
I'm taking Eagles. I took the Eagles to begin the season.
Yeah.
I know they're decimated with injuries right now. I believe in this coaching staff. I believe in this quarterback. I believe in this city. I took him at the beginning of the year.
That's a good, that's a good point. To which coaching staff do you have more confidence or faith in? The Cowboys coaching staff or the Eagles? I'm going with Doug Peterson, and I'm going with Carson Wentz. I love what they bring to the field.
It was interesting. FPI, they're heavily favoring the Cowboys.
Yeah, really?
At the end of the day, the Cowboys, we were talking about them firing their coach. Yesterday, they cut the kicker. So, obviously, they're in full-fledged desperation time, and we'll see where all of that winds up. More on that as we go. Let's get to the other NFL story of the day yesterday. And it's very hard to understand all of this. The New England Patriots have acknowledged their production crew inappropriately filmed the field and sideline during Sunday's game between the Bengals and Browns. New England plays Cincinnati this week. The Patriots did not inform the Bengals or the NFL. They called that an unintended oversight. Bill Belichick addressed the matter yesterday.
Well, evidently, this is our production people on the TV show that were there. We have absolutely nothing to do with anything that they produce, direct, or shoot, or anything. I've never even seen any of their tapes or anything else. So this is something that we 100% have zero involvement with. I don't have anything to do with TV productions or anything else. I have enough other stuff to do. And so what did or didn't happen, what they were involved or weren't involved with, and so forth, I have no idea.
So that was Belichick, and then later the Patriots released a statement that reads in part, "We understand and acknowledge that our video crew, which included independent contractors who shot the video, unknowingly violated a league policy by filming the field and sideline from the press box. When questioned, the crew immediately turned over all footage to the league and cooperated fully. The production crew is independent of our football operation. We accept full responsibility for the actions of our production crew at the Browns-Bengals game." Our NFL insider Dan Graziano tried to fill in some of the pieces earlier this morning.
The history is what the history is. 12 years ago, they were punished for videotaping the Jets sideline, and because of that history, I think people jumped to conclusions. But what happened is the Bengals saw somebody in Patriots gear with a video camera and shooting toward the field, and they called NFL security over and said, "You need to get this tape, this footage." But at this point, the Patriots are saying that this was innocent, that they were putting together something for their web series. I don't think the NFL wants this hanging over any part of the remaining season or even this Sunday's Patriots-Bengals game in Cincinnati.
The Heisman finalists were announced on Monday. You see him there, Burrow, Fields, Young, and Hurts. And these Heisman finalists are fascinating. As expected, Joe Burrow among them, the Bayou Bengal, looking to join Billy Cannon as the only Heisman winners in LSU history. At the other end of the spectrum, it's Ohio State and Justin Fields looking to become the eighth winner in Buckeyes history, which would move them past Oklahoma and Notre Dame for most all time. And so is Chase Young, also from Ohio State, became the fourth D lineman ever to be invited to New York for the Heisman ceremony. He's been dynamic this year. And Jalen Hurts continued a recent trend, as Oklahoma has now had a quarterback as a Heisman finalist in four straight years. That's the first time that's happened for any school. Now, Burrow's season, as we do expect him to win it, has been one for the ages. He's poised to break Colt McCoy's single-season completion percentage record, and he's already made SEC history with the most passing touchdowns and yards in a single season.
It seems for the second straight year, we may get a guy that no one had ever even heard of or thought about before the season began, who winds up the number one pick in the draft. And that brings in this man. There he is. Mel Kiper Jr. is ready to go this morning. Mm-hmm. So now Joe Burrow has the SEC championship. Mm-hmm. He has one or maybe two games left to go. Where do you see him at this stage of the evaluation as we start looking ahead all the way to April?
Greeny is a clear-cut number one pick overall, and that's because of the great year he had off the heel, in the heels of a fourth-year junior season. That's why he was kind of off the radar as far as the first round is concerned, maybe even the second round with a lot of people going into the year, and it's the third straight year we have had a guy come out of relatively nowhere in terms of the first-round discussion in Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, and now Joe Burrow. Think about last year, Greeny. 57% or less in eight games. He was at 45% in two games completion percentage. Okay, this year, he's been over 71% in every game. He's been at 78% or more, 79% or more in six games. Okay, last year, he had zero games of that. So it is a huge difference from 57% in change to 78%, from 16 touchdown passes to 48. That's the reason, Greeny, he went from a guy people were thinking third, fourth round to the number one pick overall for a fifth-year senior. When did you ever think you'd see a fifth-year senior quarterback in this day and age? You didn't think you'd see it, but we have it now in Joe Burrow as maybe the number one pick, or I should say as the number one pick overall.
Fair, and he is 3 years older than Trevor Lawrence is right now. We all know that Lawrence, the star quarterback at Clemson, is not eligible to come out this year. So I'm asking you a hypothetical, and I know you hate that, so I grant that ahead of time. But if those two guys were both coming out, Burrow and Lawrence, what is your best guess as to which one of them would go first?
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, you got Trevor Lawrence was the number one guy. He's like Andrew Luck. He was always considered number one. It was he and Justin Fields coming out of high school. Joe Burrow had to say, hey, I had to beg people to get me. Ohio University, his father offered him, not that Ohio State came in. Nobody really was interested. Remember Josh Allen? Nobody wanted Josh. He ended up at Wyoming. Now he's a heck of a quarterback. So Joe Burrow is going to be the number one guy. Josh was a top 10 pick. and is having a real great start to his career and proving all those doubters and skeptics wrong. I think with Joe Burrow, I think where he is right now is based on the performance from start to finish and that consistency. Trevor Lawrence hasn't had that yet. And the first 7 games this year, Greeny, Trevor Lawrence was 14 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. Last 6 games, 20 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, okay? And his completion percentage this year is better than it was last year. So I think when you look at Trevor Lawrence, next year, he's going to be in line to be the number one pick overall. If you said they were both available this year, you go by the guy. I would go with that guy who's been under the microscope and has played the much tougher schedule. I would go with Joe Burrow. But we'll see. We got Ohio State coming up with Clemson. Then we probably have LSU. It'll be the first time we've seen Trevor Lawrence go up against big-time teams. We've seen Joe Burrow do it and been phenomenal. We haven't seen Trevor Lawrence do it yet this year. Saw it last year. We haven't seen it this year. That's why right now, if you had said to me, answer the question, I would go with Joe Burrow.
I could do this all day long. So let me ask you one more. I want to ask you about Chase Young, because Laura just mentioned he's invited to New York, and most people talk about him as the best player in college football. Mm-hmm. We all understand the value of the quarterback. But we've seen guys go number one as pass rushers, Jadeveon Clowney, Myles Garrett. Mm-hmm. Is Chase Young that kind of good?
Yeah, and his numbers compared to Clowney and also Myles Garrett are pretty equal. You think about the sack numbers, he's a half behind Garrett. He's right where he's 6 ahead, 5.5 ahead of Clowney. Now, tackles for loss, Clowney and Myles Garrett had a slight edge, maybe 6 over the final 3 years, all 3-year guys. But when you look at Chase Young, he's probably going to be the second pick. I don't say probably, he will be the second pick overall, and he will be expected to be everything Myles Garrett and Nick Bosa and Von Miller and Khalil Mack and Jadeveon Clowney have become, which is great pass rushers and dynamic presence on those defensive fronts.
All right, let someone get that man a piece of pumpkin pie. Great to see you, Mel. We'll be talking a lot between now and the draft, obviously. And then we'll get to this, okay? We've seen these are some of the best prospects this year amongst teams that are not in the college football playoff. And we've seen numerous super high-end prospects sit out the final games of their collegiate careers. The names that jump to mind immediately, Christian McCaffrey got drafted high. Leonard Fournette got drafted even higher. That trend continued last year. Devin Bush, N'Keal Harry, Ed Oliver. All these guys wound up getting drafted high, and all the names on this screen are guys that we're going to wind up seeing getting drafted. So as we talk about sort of a new era in college football now, with the transfer portal that came up earlier this morning, this is another new piece of this.
Yeah.
So I'm curious. If you, Desmond Howard, who were the 4th pick in the draft once upon a time,
right?
If you were playing in a bowl game that was not for a championship,
yeah,
do you think you would have played?
Today? No. I'm going to tell you why. Because my circumstances with my dad, it was just me and my dad after my parents' divorce, it was just the two of us, and I had to work with him one summer. He worked really, really tough job. It was tool and die in the factory, and I did that summer. I realized that how much my dad put into work and just to provide for me. And I wanted to remove him from those circumstances. So I would have not played in the bowl game. If I've gone this far, and I know I'm projected to be a top 10 pick, I'm not going to take that risk at this point because now the books have been opened. I know how much everyone's making off of our labor. We're the workhorses. And now I have an opportunity to take my father out of that situation and set us up financially for some sort of security for the rest of our lives. I would not have taken that risk because of my situation. And Dylan McCaffrey did the same thing, too.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think when...
This is probably really the bowl game I would not have played in. This is the Gator Bowl. I actually had a great game. I had 2 touchdowns.
Get him.
But
get him.
Those highlights would not exist today because I would not have played in the Gator Bowl.
And I see what you're saying. I mean, look, everybody's family situation is so important in trying to figure out what you would do here. But the one thing I would point to is last year I was on the sideline for the Citrus Bowl, which featured Penn State and Kentucky. And Kentucky had some big-time guys, one of them being Josh Allen, who ends up being the seventh overall pick. And it was really important for him and Benny Snell to play in that game. And they said no matter what, they want to play in the game. It was a championship atmosphere there. That game meant a lot for them. They had a legacy at Kentucky that they wanted to solidify with a 10-win season. So I do think it's situational, but there are some of these bowl games that really matter to these players.
Yeah, I was part of one. I mean, when I went to school, I'm from Connecticut, and I went to UConn when they just started to get into, like, back then 1A football. And so when my senior year, we had the chance to go and play in a bowl game. It was our school's first bowl game ever. You couldn't have given me any amount of money not to play in this book.
Damn. Yeah,
rolling out to the right.
Dual athlete. Outside of the first quarterback.
Ball placement right there. So the defender couldn't get it. Real low. Exit.
Man, I'm dead.
I had to pay Copper that guy boy. $20 to hold that up.
Copper boy.
I would have played in the bowl game because, to Laura's point, like, I went to UConn to put UConn football on the map and to go take them to the first bowl game. But my circumstances were completely different than yours, Dez. I think your story is incredible. And I think Dez's story, so people understand it, is more of what college football is than mine. Yeah. More, like, people need to understand, a lot of these kids that have the opportunity to play in the bowl game, their choice may not be yes or no. It may only be no, because not only have I worked 8, 9, 10 years to get to this moment, my family has sacrificed a ton.
Absolutely.
And it's time to go take the next step and do what Desmond was talking about with his family.
Yeah, my circumstances weren't great in college, but I would have gone to the bowl game if they had free beer. but I completely agree. I mean, unless it's a special circumstance, Laura, the Kentucky situation last year was interesting. No big-time first-round player, if he's not playing in a national championship or semifinal, maybe the Rose Bowl is going to go. Look, I mean, these games just don't have the value anymore they used to.
It's worth pointing out two things. One, the NFL doesn't care, right? So that's a big piece of this. Not one player is dropping because they didn't play in these games.
Right.
And the other piece of it that I think is worth pointing out is this applies to a very small number of players.
True.
Most of them need that game, right?
Absolutely.
They want another game of tape against good competition.
No, you're exactly right. Yeah, so they need it.
And I also think it's Jalen Smith, you know, and obviously he overcome it. Nick Bosa, like, there's some data of he didn't play. One guy benefit, you know, like there's some proof of injury being a part of it as well.
You put UConn on the map. Was that in disappearing ink? Because I don't see.
Fired.
Just to make you feel better. Show a picture of Carson Wentz. He loves Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz. He played like Superman. But we'll show you why being Clark Kent was actually the key to his win last night. You'll see it. And we'll present an idea that'll make Russell Wilson, his teammates, and the people of the Pacific Northwest very happy. You'll hear what that is as we continue. We're calling it the Greeny Plan. That and more, and of course much more with this guy as we continue.
Get your growth chart!
Fine, Mama, hate you. Back on Get Up, and guys, the Giants might be playing out the string, but Saquon Barkley is still giving maximum effort. Can you work harder on a one-yard gain than that?
That's what I want to do to Fine Bomb right now after that last comment.
You already did it.
I'll pay to see that. I will pay to see that.
Look at the stiff arms. Saquon Barkley hasn't been a year to remember, but that kid is still fighting all the way down to the end of the season.
That's grown man stuff.
All right, we got a huge half hour coming your way here on Get Up, including in 5 minutes, Carson Wentz. We'll show you why being Clark Kent instead of Superman was the difference. Who's going to beat Nick Saban next year? And then finally, Tom Brady. Is he having trust issues with people you might not expect? Those questions and more on the way. Get Up on ESPN.
We need your help. I need your help. We need money for research. It may not save my life. It may save my children's lives. It may save someone you love. And it's very important.
Join ESPN and the V Foundation in the fight against cancer. Visit V.org/donate if you can. All donations benefit the V Foundation for Cancer Research. We're recapping Monday Night Football this morning on Get Up. Carson Wentz leading the Eagles to a win. Dan Orlovsky, your guy right here, a huge fourth and one play, and he gets the sneak over the line.
Aggressive play call when they needed it. He's a big quarterback. Get that conversion, and then I love the ball placement on this throw. The one-on-one fade to Arcega Whiteside just over the right shoulder. Outstanding.
New set of downs now for the Eagles, and Wentz finding Dallas Goedert down the field right there.
I love the rhythm. He put his back foot in the ground and drove that ball down the seam. game against the cover three. And then this play, Laura, like, this is a really good design by Doug P. Outstanding throw and dropped arm angle by Carson Wentz.
Yeah, and that made the game go to overtime. A touchdown wins it. A field goal does not win it. And so Wentz trying to get it done here, dumping it off to Miles Sanders.
Good start to this drive. You get those receivers out there on the edge. They block. Little easy throw. Now you get Carson on the move with a play action pass, something he does really well. Good ball to Perkins here.
Yeah, that was a gain of 13. And then later in the drive, second and goal for the Eagles. Wentz finding his boy Ertz wide open in the back of the end zone for the game-winning touchdown. The Eagles pull out an overtime victory over the Giants, 23-17. And many have said this morning it could change their season. Wentz threw 50 pass attempts last night, becoming the first player to throw 50 passes in a win on Monday Night Football since Tom Brady did that back in 2009. And Tony Romo, the only other player to do that in the last 15 years. He and Brady both did it against the Bills, both oddly winning 25-24. That's a real sneaky one by him, though.
In the meantime, let's come back to your guy here in Carson Wentz, because a lot of times you might think to yourself, well, everybody on the team is hurt. He needs to play like Superman. But you're going to show us it was actually playing like Clark Kent that is the reason they won last night.
Absolutely. And then the Superman moment came, but it was 3rd and 7, fourth quarter. And this is the sub in the moment where I was like, all right, he's starting to understand it. Again, 3rd and 7, fourth quarter. We're down 7 points. This is the time to put on the cape. Okay, I got to go make a play. So the Eagles line up, and they're down in their trip set. And Carson Wentz looks out, and he goes, well, there's only two defenders out there for the Giants. Something must be up. So he brings his eyes on the inside, and he sees both linebackers up in the line of scrimmage. So instead of him trying to go, you know, I'll make a play. I'll do it on myself. What I love that he does is he looks down here to these receivers, and he changes the play. What he changes it to, again, on 3rd and 7 is this. He's going to go trust that that receiver will go make a block. And that receiver will go make a block, and I'm going to throw this little quick screen to the flat right now. Again, this linebacker was up in the line of scrimmage, and Carson Wentz is going, I trust you guys that you'll go do your job, and I can throw this ball, what, 5 yards in front of the sticks on 3rd and 7 in the fourth quarter. That is a guy willing to play Clark Kent football, because that's the linebacker, Ogletree, that was up in the line of scrimmage that has to go make that tackle, and he's not able to go close the gap there. That was a big moment to me to go, okay, he's starting to understand the situation. Now let's go to the game tired. I love the placement of this play, left hash, right? Why that matters is because you have 1, 2, 3 tight ends up at the top of the screen. Now, the ball being on the left hash with those numbers, this safety can't just play to the tight end numbers, because there's a one-on-one matchup at the bottom of the field that you can leave this whole field for a throw. So I love the design by Doug P. Now, this guy that everybody knows is the man to watch. Zach Ertz on this route. He's going to widen release on this defensive back, and watch how good of a job he does to open up that defensive back. And I want to freeze it in this moment, because there's a guy up at the top of the screen that everyone can't see. That's a receiver. He's covered. This guy, he's covered. This guy, he's covered. There's one person that Carson Wentz could throw the football to right there. Only one. This is the moment to be Superman. Golden is bearing down on his chest, and he's going to try to split his sternum in half. Now watch the throw and the ball placement to Zach Ertz. It doesn't get any better than that, folks. That ball placement doesn't get any better than that when you're getting split in half by a 250-pounder. So you watch the kid grow up and go, you know what, in that moment, I needed to be Clark Kent. And then the moment presented itself where he had to rise up and make a big-time throw and be Superman, and he did it.
I have to, it's really well done. And you've made the point this morning, Desmond, multiple times. This is the kind of win that can sort of mobilize a team. I'm not sure that's the word I'm looking for, but so get a team going that has been really
galvanize
struggling.
Galvanize a team. You get the team. I tell you, you love Carson Wentz. That was a great breakdown thing. But no, this is the type of win that can turn the season around for the Philadelphia Eagles. Great win last night. It wasn't more about the Giants. It was more about the circumstances they had to overcome.
Yes, and galvanize was indeed the word I was looking for there. So let's work our way forward, because I have a couple of sneaky big notes coming out of the NFL from yesterday, and one of them is from Seattle. Rashard Penny will miss the rest of the season with an ACL injury. Before the injury, he was starting to come on for Seattle, accounting for 236 yards and 3 touchdowns in their previous 2 games. More sneaky big news. A source is telling our Adam Schefter that Colts veteran kicker Adam Vinatieri will undergo season-ending surgery on his left knee. The team officially placing Vinatieri on injured reserve yesterday. And then more kicking news out of Dallas. The Cowboys this week released their kicker Brett Maher, who leads the league with 10 missed field goals this season, and signed veteran Kai Forbath to replace him. Forbath has good numbers. Maher's been a good kicker for a long time, but this year he has really struggled, including in their loss on Thursday night. And so, you know, this was a week that began. I was here Friday morning, and we were talking about, will the Cowboys fire their coach? Instead, they cut the kicker. So we're talking about the Cowboys. We watch the Eagles. Which of these two teams looks like the better team to you?
Well, I think the Cowboys look like the more talented team and the better team, but I'm taking the Eagles, and that's unequivocally for me. I took them to begin the season. I believe in their coaching staff more. I believe that last night's performance, we've talked about it all morning, Des, like last night's performance was one of those performances when you walk into the locker room and it gives you juice.
Yeah.
It gives you adrenaline. It gives you belief. So I'm taking the Eagles. And also, I think their defensive line can at least challenge the Cowboys' offensive line.
What do you think?
I like the fact that when you look at the Cowboys, it seems like they're underachieving. They have all this talent, but they're not hitting the heights that they should. But then when you look at the Eagles, they're overachieving right now. They have a lot of confidence. They had a quarterback who lost his top receiver, Alshon Jeffrey. They didn't even hesitate. They went out there. They stayed the course. It wasn't easy. I love the fight in the Philadelphia Eagles right now.
So I will present this as a notion because we saw over the weekend, Adam Schefter reporting, the NFL, one of these two teams is going to win the NFC East and is going to host a playoff game wild card weekend against a team that will have a much better record, whichever team that winds up being. And Adam Schefter said that there doesn't seem to be any appetite within the NFL for reseeding the NFL playoffs. And I tweeted this, but sometimes on Twitter, things aren't as clear as you would like them to be. I'm not in favor of reseeding, okay? I don't believe the NFL should just take the top six records in the NFC and put them in the playoffs. But I do believe they can make one very simple change, and I will present it to you now. We will call this the Greeny Rule if you want. I've had some success with that in the past. Do not reseed. Just give home field advantage to the team with the best record. It's not that complicated.
Right.
So the Cowboys or the Eagles, whoever winds up winning that division, would play Seattle, if indeed that's the way it plays out in the first round, but just play the game in Seattle.
Yeah.
So you still maintain the integrity and significance of the division. The Cowboys are still in the playoffs by virtue of being the champion of the NFC East.
Right.
But don't make Seattle travel across the country if they're 13-3
right.
and Dallas is 7-9 and play that game on the road. That's the Greeny Rule. What do you think?
I think that's one of the best things I've literally ever heard when it
Love
comes
it.
To the NFL, let alone the playoffs. I mean, the NFL is the ultimate meritocracy. You should get what you've earned. And for teams that play in really difficult divisions, you shouldn't get penalized for being in a really good division, and teams get rewarded for being in a really bad one.
Yeah.
This is one that makes too much sense. Like, it just makes too much sense.
It makes a lot of sense. You should be rewarded for victories, not for mediocrity. So how are you going to have a team with 12 wins have to travel across the country? That makes absolutely no sense. I agree with you, Greeny. They should do that.
Yeah, and again, it's not reseeding. Those are two different things. I'm not talking about taking a division out of the playoffs.
Yeah.
Let that go. That's important. But the reality is it's harder to go 7-9 in the NFC West than the NFC East, much less going 12-4.
So you're saying if like the NFC East champion still gets into the playoffs.
Plays the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly,
they just don't host a playoff
host
game.
Correct.
Yeah, exactly.
You
no
just
brainer.
Give home
no
field brainer. Advantage to the team with a better record. It's not that complicated. It's not reseeding. And let it forever be known as the Greeny Rule. Meanwhile, I got some college stuff to get to here with Mr. Finebaum. The Lane train is back to the SEC. Lane Kiffin has signed on to become the head coach at Ole Miss after leading Florida Atlantic to its second Conference USA championship. And this is something that will get a lot of attention because of Lane Kiffin's longstanding history in the SEC in a variety of places. A brief stint as the head coach, of course, at Tennessee, and then a successful stint as the offensive coordinator in Alabama. And Nick Saban's assistants have historically had all kinds of trouble with him. But I think you think this is going to be different this time.
Yeah, remember one thing. A couple of years ago, Lane Kiffin got the FAU job, and he coached in the semifinal game, so he quit. And he still got fired by Nick Saban because he lost interest right before the final. I think it ended up costing Alabama a national championship. But Lane Kiffin is obsessed with Nick Saban. I think Nick Saban is obsessed with him. And Greeny, I firmly believe that of all these disciples, and we've talked about them ad nauseum between Kirby Smart and Jimbo and so many others, that Lane Kiffin is going to be the first Saban disciple to beat the GOAT. I'm not saying it will happen next year, but it's going to happen because he will spend every moment. He'll lose 11 games to prepare for that one. And I think Saban's not intimidated by people, but he's going to look over there and go, I don't want to play Lane Kiffin.
He he's like a gnat for Nick Saban, isn't he? And in the best, most respectful way that you can be a gnat. I mean, here's the thing about Lane. I think when you look, yeah, like a G-N-A-T. Anyway, when you look at what he brought to the SEC, that was part of really the shift offensively in the entire league that then made all these other teams, Greeny, have to decide that they've got to do big changes with their programs. And I do think that Lane will be obsessed with Coach Saban. There's a way that Saban looks at Kiffin with respect, but he also can't stand him.
I had someone close to Nick Saban tell me once that he had to get rid of Kiffin before the national championship game because he was like your recalcitrant 16-year-old who just grabs the keys to the Ferrari and forgets to turn the garage door opener and goes right through it.
Kiffin's matured a lot, though, since then, though, I think. At FAU.
Is this a good move? I mean, people will ask this at Ole Miss because of the history involving Kiffin. You like the move.
They were 4-8 under Matt Luke. This is a brilliant move. I mean, you hate to hire a coach to win the press conference, but this is Lane's fifth head coaching job, four in college and one with Al Davis at the Oakland Raiders. I think it's a fantastic move.
It is his, and you can take this however you wish, but it is his fifth head coaching job, and he's 44 years old. Yeah. So, I mean, that tells you two different stories at the same time. Let's leave it on that note. We'll get to some of the other stuff I wanted to. We don't have enough time to break into it. Let's just remind you that Thursday night on ESPN, the top college players and coaches are honored at the 29th annual Home Depot College Football Award Show from the College Football Hall of Fame in Atlanta. Thursday night, 7 Eastern on ESPN and the ESPN app. Coming up, Tom Brady may not have full confidence in some of his receivers. Can that be fixed in 3 weeks, or is it already too late for the Patriots? Answers on the way. Get up on ESPN.
I don't think he was out of bounds, but the Patriots have no more challenges. They've used both.
I told y'all.
Brady throws end zone for Edelman, knocked away.
We got next.
It was another one of the more interesting games of the NFL weekend and season as Tom Brady and the Patriots once again struggled to score points and lost at home to Kansas City. All eyes on that offense. And Brady was on WEEI radio yesterday talking about trusting in one another down the stretch.
That's like every other year. Every season has its own unique challenges, and we face them, and we have to learn from them. Our whole season's ahead of us. So we got to rally together, trust in each other, and go lay it on the line like we've been doing every week. And this is about a one-week season for us and trying to go out and go to Cincinnati and win, you know, win on the road.
And listen, you have been talking about this at great length here, and you did a terrific video breakdown yesterday for anyone who didn't see it of the decision Brady makes at the very end of that game to go to Edelman rather than Jacoby Myers probably had everything to do with a lack of trust. So I guess I would ask you two guys, you're a quarterback, you're a receiver. Yep. Can that be built? Can Tom Brady come to trust this collection of guys with 3 weeks left in the season?
No, not till he sees it. I mean, I used this quote a couple weeks ago. Trust is like a forest. It takes a long time to grow and can burn down very quickly. And I think that's what's happened is it takes a long time for a quarterback to look at a receiver and go, I believe that you'll come down and make this play. I believe that in this one-on-one matchup that you're going to value the ball just as much as I do, that you'll go win just as much as I hope that you would win. And that doesn't happen in a matter of two. I mean, they got three games left. They got 160 snaps left in their regular season. And so it's not going to happen in that amount of time. I think trust is very difficult. I think knowing who to trust is even harder. Yeah. And I think that's where the Patriots are, quarterback to receiver wise, is Brady. Not only does he not trust guys, it's like, well, who do I trust?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. Brady is in the twilight of his career, the twilight stage of his career. Yeah. So he wants to go to people he has confidence in and that he can trust. You're going to earn that trust in the game. You can do certain things in practice. You can look great and you can make spectacular catches. But if you don't do it on Sundays or you don't do it game time, that's when you lose the trust of a guy like a first ballot Hall of Famer like Brady. I played for a first ballot Hall of Famer with a first ballot Hall of Famer in Brett Favre. And I tell you, when I came on that team, they had their whole receiving corps. I understood that when I got my opportunities, I had to make sure I caught the ball.
Yes.
Because he's not going to come to you. When you're making decisions in the game, everything happens in a nanosecond.
Yep.
So you're going to look at your guys and you're going to say, no, good. Because I know I can trust this guy, rely on him to make the catch.
And I think it's important to Dez's point, like, There's only 60 snaps a game. It's not like you can just randomly take this play and go, let me try this one out. Let me see if he can win here. Like, these usually show up in moments, third downs, red zones, where it's critical, where everything is under a microscope. You're not just going to off the whim go, I'll try this guy out. Let's see. Yeah. That's for practice.
Yeah, exactly.
And teams practice less nowadays, so... Yeah. I don't see how this is this instant quick fix.
From a receiver standpoint, what is going on with Jakobi Meyers in your mind?
I think it's mental at this point. Yeah. You know, you have to go out there and get extra reps in practice. If Tom's not going to stay out there with you after practice, do it with the second string or third string quarterback, get on the jugs machines. It's more of a mental thing than it is physical. I believe he can make those catches. You just have to get over the hump mentally.
It's got to be something. It's either the confidence or things moving too quickly. When you see a receiver dropping as many balls, and I don't mean to pick on him, right, but the reality is we all watch these games and we all see his inability to hang on to the football. He obviously can catch those passes. Right. When you see a receiver not able to do it in a game, is that you saying it's mental? Is that a function of it moving too quickly for him?
Or he may need to go get his eyes tested. He may need to go get his eyes tested.
I would do that immediately.
Yeah, for sure. Without a doubt.
Dial up the thing you read.
I don't think this has been like an issue for Jakobi Meyers his whole life or even this year. I mean, it's just started to show itself and obviously was magnified on Sunday. The interesting thing is I've been around guys that struggle with drops. And to Dez's point, like, there was a guy that I played with, Eric Ebron, with the Colts. I was with the Lions. And Eric would always wear a visor. And he struggled with drops early on. And I said, Eric, take the visor off. Exactly. Eric wouldn't. He wouldn't take the visor off. And I would be like, give it a try. So there might be something there. Face mask, I don't know what.
Okay, let me briefly also mention that they're telling me in my ear we have these Belichick quotes ready. So let me quickly set up what it is I'm about to read to you. You're probably aware of the story that came up yesterday. The NFL is investigating video that was shot by an independent member of the New England Patriots organization in the press box of the game between Cleveland and Cincinnati. The Patriots play the Bengals this weekend, and there is some question as to why they were videotaping the sideline and the field. Bill Belichick did his media with the Cincinnati reporters this morning and was asked about it and said this: we've always tried to do everything the right way. You know, look, we're competitive and try to be competitive in every area, but we don't knowingly, intentionally want to do anything that is across the line. This is a team with a history, obviously, of things like this. Belichick saying, since that's happened, and he's referring in that case to Spygate, I'd say we've tried to keep a good distance behind the line and not maybe take it as far as we might have in the past. But it's never really fundamentally changed there. The only comment I think is reasonable to make right now, in the absence of knowing exactly what did and didn't happen here and the NFL is performing its investigation, is, and you said this earlier and I agree with you, the concept of confirmation bias will come into play strongly here. People out there who will forever believe the Patriots are cheaters, they will use this as evidence of that. There are people out there who will forever believe that that was inflated and was, I didn't mean that that way, that was overstated, and that's not what I meant. That was overstated.
Yeah.
And that's not, and people will now use this to say, look, they're trying to pin this on them again.
I kind of feel a little different now. I feel a little different after hearing that from Coach Belichick. I mean, he just told us, we push the envelope. We see as far as we can go. We will do anything we can to gain a competitive advantage. And he says, like, we've tried to keep our distance, and maybe we wouldn't have it gone as far as we did in the past. But I mean, hearing him talk like that, I go, you're kind of telling me that you will push some boundaries here on this stuff to gain any advantage necessary that is maybe unintentionally allotted.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that when you look at Bill Belichick and their philosophy, they want to get any advantage they possibly can. I'm not saying that they were trying to cheat, but they were probably out there doing something that would give them an advantage one way or another. Where there's smoke, there's fire. Some guys' philosophy, hey, if you ain't cheating, you're not trying. Yeah. I'm not saying that's their philosophy, but since they have a history of this, this needs to be looked into a little deeper.
And I don't know all the rules tied to it. Like, I don't know what
the rules are. You are not allowed to videotape the opposing team's side.
Well, it's very clear, right? Like, the Patriots have given up the film, right? The NFL has the film.
Right,
it's
correct.
It's a very clear, show the film.
Yeah, we'll see what
the NFL will conduct their investigation. Dan Graziano told us earlier this morning here that the league will conduct its investigation, and he would suppose the league will want to move on from this as quickly as possible, make some decision on this as quickly as possible. The teams play each other this weekend. Okay, we'll continue. And a reminder that at first glance, Shaq and Stephen A. Smith seem very different, but Stephen A. knows they share one unique quality. They'll tell you exactly what that is on First Take. It follows us in 5 minutes, live here on ESPN. College basketball tonight on ESPN, the Jimmy V Classic from the Garden, 7 Eastern. Number one, Louisville, looking for a 10-0 start, taking on Texas Tech, followed by 8-1 Indiana, taking on UConn. Both games are on ESPN and the ESPN app. I got Heisman voters here, and I got a Heisman winner here.
Yes, sir.
Is Joe Burrow going to be the biggest landslide winner of all time?
I think so. I had Ohio State push Justin Fields as opposed to Chase Young. I think it would have been a closer race. But I think he's going to win by the biggest landslide in the history, Paul.
Even bigger than what you won by?
Slightly. That seems slightly.
Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow. First Take now.